Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to the Mac Effect. Here we go with season two as we continue interviewing special guests, special people. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you guys for, always giving us that click, that share. I appreciate that. For today's interview, guys, I'm actually going to be interviewing someone that's very special to me. You guys have heard me mention him in season one a lot because he is not only a friend, not only someone that I look up to, but definitely a mentor in my life. When I always said counseling and mentorship is important, this is the guy you have to pay attention to. Allow me to introduce to you an ordained minister from the Assemblies of God. And with the Assemblies of God, he also has his coaching certificate. He has graduated from the LABI College with focus in Bible and ministry, guys. He has also graduated from Fuller Theology Seminary with his master's in theology and ministry. He is also the director of Breath of Life for the coaching. He is a hands-on church planter, literally from the ground up, or helping reconstruct the entity in its own. As a pastor, he embraces education, challenges, and change, which I love because that's a great leader to follow. His mission is to develop godly men, whether they're leading their families, they're leading a church, or they're leading themselves through LEAD, which is a mentorship program offered by Breath of Life. In addition to coaching, man, this guy has a long resume, right, guys? In addition to coaching, he also has a passion to stand for marriages. And I'm testimony to one of those guys, so I appreciate that so much. This man is so blessed, guys, with a beautiful wife, four amazing children, a beautiful daughter-in-law, and two incredible grandchildren. My special guest, my mentor, Reverend Rudy Baniagua.
Bro.
Did I do?
You did great, but did I haven't been around. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. You know, I always tell people that I just want to be read. I want to be known by Rudy, not my function.
Yeah.
And yeah. So all of that is great. But man, I'm just happy to be here with you and proud of you, man.
Yeah, like,
just
thank
to be
you.
Sitting here and you guys haven't seen the behind the scenes. But man, this guy, this guy is the real deal, and excited about what God is doing in your life and what you've done.
Yeah,
because you've also had to do the work. And so, man, yeah. I'm just excited to be here, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, first of all, for being the guest. I wanted to publicly show the people as well, like, the man behind the, not the only one, right? Because it's God, it's you, it's other men that have been involved in my life, but people that have impacted the change. Because it's one thing to speak about that person, but it's another for them to see the person. And you just actually recently told me that myself, as far as, like, you know, it's nice to have all these accolades, but know me for the person of who I am. So that's really awesome. And that's kind of the reason why I wanted to interview you, because one, me, I want to kind of get to know the man himself first. And then if people do want to reach out and they do want to, you know, men, if we are honest and say, hey, we need help, we have a place that we can reach out to and definitely, you know, try to go there.
Yeah.
So to kind of start it off, Rudy, if you don't mind, I kind of just want to see if you don't mind sharing a little bit as far as, like, your background, you know, where you come from, your upbringing as a child, because for me, it's really interesting to just even learn this, because a lot of the times we just kind of, like me, I just know you for the person that has helped me and given me so much room for growth. But yeah, it's going to be a good interview for me to learn a little bit more about you now.
Yeah, so good. So I was born in Escuintla, Guatemala, in Central America. And I was born into a family where mom was only 15 years old when she got pregnant. Obviously wasn't ready to have a baby or wasn't even planning on getting married to my dad. And my dad in Escuintla, there's ingenios where they basically manufacture the sugar. And so an ingenio basically is low-class people, very low income. And my mom's family didn't like my dad because of that. And so they actually tried to not have my mom marry my dad, but my dad wanted to obviously love my mom, but also wanted to, you know, take care of his responsibilities now as a baby was on its way. And so I actually went through a lot in my mother's womb because at 15, no one thought she was pregnant. So they thought there was something wrong with her, and they gave her laxatives and laxatives to just kind of let the baby come out. But, you know, I was stubborn, man. I've been stubborn even in my mother's womb, and I've been a strong character from then. And so so I'm the oldest of two. I have a younger sister who's 7 years apart. And, you know, grew up in a home that my mom stayed at home. My dad was the provider. And up to I was 7 years old, I my parents left Guatemala to come to America to kind of find a better life. And I saw at that moment, right before that happened, though, my dad was unfaithful to my mom. Mm. And I remember walking around the community, the city where I lived, or the town, and I remember walking with my mom, and we found my dad coming out of a hotel room with the girl that he was having an affair with, or just kind of. And
how old at this time?
I probably like 6 years old. Wow. And I remember, you know, clearly. I'm 48 now, and I still vividly remember the whole scene there. And then you know, we weren't believers at that moment, but you know, God's grace, they worked it out. And they both decided to come into America, and they left my sister and I back home with grandma and my aunt and uncle.
Okay.
And so that started as something in me that I didn't know back then, but some childhood wounds of rejection, abandonment, and just kind of being able to not understand at that time what it meant to me. And what it did to me, because at that time they thought that they were doing their best, right? So I know that it wasn't intentional of them, you know, that they didn't want anything to do with me or abandon me. But they came, and then they worked here for 2 years. They went back, and then 2 years later, we immigrated to Guatemala as well. I mean, we immigrated from Guatemala to Hollywood, California. Wow. We had a family there that took us in, and and then that also another, you know, childhood wound there of injustice, the wound of injustice. Felt like, you know, that it wasn't fair, you know, and all these things. And always wanted to prove myself, right? And so that injustice wound also led to a lack of identity. Just trying to fit in, you know, not being Guatemalan, not being American, being an immigrant. I remember just being in the bus stop because we didn't have a car, and we saw the green and white vans of immigration and having to run and hide. And, you know, it's just, yeah. So, but I grew up in a mom that she was a perfectionist. Wanted me to be perfect. Wanted me to do the right thing. Couldn't get dirty. Because, you know, there would be problem at home because I got to look nice and I got to be presentable. A lot of respect and structure at home. I didn't lack anything, even though we were immigrants here. They were working 2 to 3 jobs, but, you know, never lacked anything physical. But, yeah, just having to always kind of be proper and look nice and be presentable. That was my childhood.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's good to know. That's crazy. You know, I hear you say a lot of words, like right now you can identify saying, you know, there's trauma there, there's abandonment. And back then as a kid, I mean, you wouldn't know that, right? Like obviously you would still grow up and just kind of, you know, go with your feelings. At what age did you kind of become awake to start feeling and understanding, oh man, these are traumas that have hurt my inner child?
Yeah, I think I was I was unfaithful to Tanya we're in 2024, so almost 18 years ago. Okay. I was unfaithful to Tanya twice, and that process took me to look inward. Mm. And really started to process to understand the why, what took me there. Mm-hmm. Why did this happen? And one of the things that I realized is that my grandparent was an adulterer, from both maternal and paternal. My dad was unfaithful, and then I was, and then I became unfaithful. So there were some patterns there that I needed to look into, and really understanding the culture and the way that I brought up and everything else. And so it really led me to kind of go, and then obviously counseling and through that restoration process, it really allowed me to go back in. And I was a little boy that was dealing with anger, and then the injustice, and then the abandonment really allowed me to, or led me to, look for things that would bring instant pleasure rather than creating or building a life that was going to be long lasting.
Yeah. Man, that's crazy. And my question, I know it's more like, you know, that came with time, because prior to that, obviously, you were growing up in the States. And it's crazy because you mentioned, you know, being an immigrant, you know, you would see these vans. And for me, I sometimes like to, like, I don't want to say compare myself, but I do want to, like, be like, man, God, thank you. Like, I never had to worry about that. Thank God, you know. Yeah. I have friends till today that do worry about those things. Yeah. And we don't realize how blessed we are when you literally can drive around and not have to worry what kind of police is the one behind me that's pulling me over right
yeah.
now. And that's crazy.
So good.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we tend to take things for granted here in the U.S. because we're always looking for that instant gratification.
Yeah.
Or this focus of me, right? As long as I'm good, I don't care what everyone else is going through.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, so that all of those things, man, just led me to look inward and really trying to figure it out. I had to ask my dad for forgiveness 10 years ago. Because I was healing and I was going through this journey, and I had to go to him and say, "Hey, Dad, I know that maybe some of my rebellion teenage years and some of the lack of attachment with you, of even wanting to call you every day or every weekend or whatever, was creating or causing that hindrance, was that in the back of my mind, I still was this small child looking at you and remembering walking out of that hotel room." Mm-hmm. And I think there was some type of lack of respect there, even though you were a great dad. Man, you gave me everything. You were there. But I think in the back of my mind, this little thing that we've never talked about, like we never do in our Hispanic homes.
Yeah, for sure.
We didn't talk about, we didn't acknowledge it. I think that's where my rebellion years came out of. And so I just wanted to say sorry for that. And we had a great moment, man. My mom was there. My wife was there. And just kind of letting bygones be bygones and understanding and taking ownership of my own, you know, decision making as well.
And has your dad gone through a healing process as well?
No.
So how did he take it when you had that conversation with him? Because yeah. I'm sure the fear to have that conversation for you was like, well, he's not healed. Like, he might just stare at me and just be like, okay, mijo. Like, walk me through the process as far as, like, that's a brave step to know that I have to go say, you know what, I forgive you for what you've done.
Yeah. So part of that is, you know, in my own healing journey, it's more about me than it is about how my dad was going to respond to it. And so the healing comes with discomfort, then acknowledgement, and then you start working on yourself. And so not until you start acknowledging that something did happen to you or something did hurt you, then you won't go down to the processing and understanding and even own it.
Yeah.
That then won't take you. So even though my dad wasn't in a healing journey and he wasn't even probably thinking about it, I was. And so I was doing it for me. So I didn't focus on how he was going to respond to it. That's not my focus. My focus was that I needed to do this so that I can be healed and I can move on to the next season that I was moving into. Yeah. And so he was shocked. He cried. But, you know, that generation, man, no one ever told them to take ownership of anything. Yeah. And it's always been, hey, man, no one taught me. I just had to do what I needed to do. And I said, that's all right, Dad. I don't fault you I'm not angry or mad at you. I just needed to let you know that I need to do this for myself, because I need to get this inner child, letting them know that it's okay. Yeah. and that we need to move on.
Yep, I totally agree. And one of the reasons, guys, I've always told you guys about Breath of Life and Rudy and Tanya is because this is exactly why. Like you mentioned something, and I always forget exactly how you say it, but in the healing process, you're first going to encounter uncomfort. And boy, is it uncomfortable.
That's right.
Because I've gone through certain healings, and I've figured out what I've been doing, and I'm like, it's embarrassing. I don't want to share it. Like, I feel like I'm going to lose people around me. But when I have done it, it's like I'm shedding something away, but I'm becoming something better and just newer, which is really good.
Yeah, because we are letting go of someone else's decision that caused us pain.
Yeah.
And so what happens is that when we are carrying on someone else's bad decisions or pain or hurt, then it becomes an overwhelming feeling for us. And so once we identify that and acknowledge that it's like, bro, it's not me. It's not for me to carry. It wasn't even my decision. It wasn't even my fault. Like, it just becomes a burden, a weight that comes down off of you. And now you start dealing with your own decision making, not someone else's decision making.
Yeah. Yeah. And for all you guys that are watching, I'm not just trying to just jump into like healing processes and discovering the inner child and figure out what hurt you, because it takes time, and that's even uncomfortable to do, because you have to ask yourself the most uncomfortable questions. And we'll get back to it right now, honestly, because I personally love healing. I've discovered that healing just drives wanting to grow, wanting to learn, wanting to develop. And I'm in a place where I love growing and developing. But kind of coming back to your childhood, how was Rudy in his high school years? Was he, straight A student? Was he a above average? Was he a failing student? Who was Rudy in high school?
Yeah. So growing up, I've always been a leader. Growing up, I've always been the one that wants to be in the front, the one that always wants to be the standout.
How did you know that?
Bro, as long as I remember, I always wanted to be the star, or I always wanted to be the main attraction. And so, but always from a place of wanting that and being that, but also dealing with identity issues, like, you know, is it really me and all this stuff? I mean, remember, insecurities, being an immigrant and justice wound, abandonment. Always wanting that and doing that, but at the same time, man, is this really me or anything? And so I played tackle football at high school.
Nice.
Was really good. I played sophomore year. I was playing varsity football, free safety and wide receiver. Right. So I was part of the cool crowd, you know.
Always, see, these are things that I didn't know. Now we're going to have to catch the football, man. Yeah, got to see these wide receiver skills.
Yeah, wide receiver. I was running a 4.6 40, 4.5 40, pretty fast. And just enjoying that, you know, the party scene, the clubbing in a way of, like, you know, house parties. Wasn't able to club. But, yeah, you know, had girlfriends and maybe a player here and there. But nothing too crazy or wild, you know?
Yeah. It's more wild than mine, let me tell you. But, but you know what I love, guys? You know what I love is, like, when you heal, like, did you guys not catch, like, what he's saying? It's like, look, yeah, I had girlfriends. Maybe I was a player. Like, you're okay with saying these things, because when you're not healed, you're ashamed. You're like, I don't want to tell people the things I've done in my past. And what I love about it is he understands, and he's helped me to understand, your past does not equal or identify who you are now. And it kind of goes with even like growth. It was growth for us at the time, right? Like whatever you went through and whatever I went through. So you were kind of a jock in school then. And then after school, after high school, did you like, you know, the school academy, like studying and learning? Or was this something that you're like, I want to get far away from it and just do my own thing?
Yeah, I think so. Not a straight A student, above average kind of student. After high school, I went back to Guatemala. So the way that we got legal status, I think it's important to know because I talked about the immigration aspect of it. My dad was doing at the time work for this Jewish owner of a business owner where he would paint the carousel horses. And, you know, back in the days, bro, like the movie stars in Hollywood wanted, you know, carousel horses or wooden horses. Mm-hmm. And, man, my dad was doing such a good job that this owner said, hey, I wanna sponsor your family. And wow. And we had to pay for it, but he signed, you know, that he was sponsoring us, and that's how we became residents, green card holders, and then we're all now citizens. But by the grace of God, man, someone identified and saw something in my dad that if it wasn't for him, I don't know how we would have gotten legal status because we were illegal immigrants here. And so I, you know, by God's grace now and by touching someone's heart, you know, we were able to do that and we were able to become citizens. So I do that. And then I go to a PA program and I go to Guatemala, I come back, PA program, and I start working in surgery. And I end up being a part of the cardiac team doing open heart surgery for adults and kids. Wow. And I worked in different hospitals in Orange County and California. And we were doing the life, man. We had two kids that were teenagers at that time, and they were living the life. We were living the life, and then but God, right? But God came in, and we answer a call.
You didn't have God in your heart at that time.
When I married Tanya, I became a believer.
Okay,
but before that, I tell Tanya I was single, bilingual, and ready to mingle. that was my thing, bro. Single, bilingual, ready to mingle, and I was at the USC University Hospital and met her, and then you know we were doing all that. But yeah, I became a believer when I met Tanya over 21 years ago.
Okay, so when you were a doctor and you were doing surgeries, you believed in God already.
Yeah, yeah, we were operating team. They knew me as the men of the cloth, the men of the cloth.
And, why is that?
It was just this priestly kind of, you know, Catholic foundation where, you know, the godly men, quote unquote, wears the cloth, you know. And so, but never really religious person, very relational with Jesus Christ. But also understanding that God works in mysterious ways and he can use people from any background, from any experience, just like he did this Jewish man that blessed my father and my family.
Yeah.
And so I never put God in a box.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then, man, these are good things to learn. And I know some people can relate. This is why I'm trying to put this out there, these interviews out there, guys, because if we can relate to them somehow, you know, just hearing how to understand the healing process. So coming back to the healing process, and I know you mentioned it was through the infidelity that you had that kind of forced you. Was it like a rock bottom that eventually got you to really start questioning like, hey, something's going on? And the reason why I'm asking, because I want our people that are watching, the viewers, the fans, I want other men, I want women to see, hey, can we learn before we hit rock bottom? Or how can we teach men? Because I know a lot of men out there that need help, but just don't think they need help. So I'm trying to figure out how I can help without them hitting rock bottom first.
Yeah, you know, my rock bottom, it wasn't rock bottom for me as an individual, but it was rock bottom for my family.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I still had my career. I still had a job. When I left the house, I was still working at two hospitals, and I had my BMW, and I got an apartment in Newport Beach.
Yeah, money wasn't an issue. Yeah,
like I opened the front door, and there's the boardwalk and the sand. So it wasn't rock bottom from a financial position or materialistic, but definitely rock bottom from a sense of manhood, if that makes sense. And when I mean manhood, I mean looking in the mirror and really seeing myself, is this the man that I wanted to be? And so was that rock bottom? Yes, manhood-wise, it was. And I had to understand and come to an understanding of some of my wounds and some of my selfish desires, and some of my selfish worldview of how I view the people around me and how I view myself. And that really took me into a process of really, man, understanding that I've caused so much pain. And I tell people all the time, you know why I've been faithful to Tanya the last 18 years, 19 years? And the reason why I've been faithful to Tanya is because, man, I don't want to cause this much pain. It's very easy to fall into pornography. Very easy to fall into lust. Very easy to fall into another relationship that, you know, and it's not because I'm a pastor or a believer or bro. It has nothing to do with that. Anyone that's a pastor or believer is as weak as someone that doesn't have God in their heart. But I realized that I've caused so much pain. And when I had to be real with myself and the pain that I've caused with the kids and my wife and myself, it hurt me. And I don't want to hurt that way anymore. Yeah. And I don't want to hurt others the way that I hurt people in that season of my life.
Yeah. And you know what I love about that? It's that, you know, you're rock bottom. Like, it hits me, again, because I feel like I have to think a certain way in order for God to hit. But you mentioned, you know, hey, the debit card was working. I would open the door. The beach is right in front of me. Like, people think it's until you lose the BMW, you lose the apartment, that's rock bottom. But you had it. But something internal was like, what's missing? Why do I feel this way? There was something that just didn't feel right that made you at least start asking questions. And when you started asking questions, you started realizing this is not the man, like the man I want to be.
That's right.
And I think when you hit that question is when you really, really go into a mind like of discovering. What did you do next to start discovering? Did you quickly look for counseling? Did you, look for Tanya? Like, what did you do?
Yeah, so good. So at that moment when I'm looking at myself, and that's a great question, is this the man that I want to be? Is this it for me? Like, is this the lifestyle that I want to have? That process allowed me to, number one, look inward. Number two, start seeking God more and really understanding my spiritual journey. And then number three, bringing people around me that can help me lead myself. And those are three components that I think every man needs to understand. That number one, you need to accept and you need to own this pain that you're feeling. Is this the question? Is this the man that I want to be? Second, you got to start your spiritual journey. Wherever you're at, look for God. Start looking for a community that can help you in that spiritual journey. And then third, you know, at that moment, I couldn't lead myself. There was guilt. There was shame. There was disappointment, and I didn't really even know where to start. So you need someone that can come in either as a coach, either as a mentor, or someone that can help you lead yourself to start establishing some healthy habits.
Yeah, I agree. And these are the points that I've covered in season one, guys, if you have tuned in. And if not, you guys can feel free to go back to season one. A lot of great topics that I mentioned, pornography, infidelity, individual growth, discovering men's feelings. And I've always shared that it's not just about men. I know that because I feel it in my heart to reach out for men, but I know women can be impacted as well. And some of them have even mentioned comments like, dude, you've impacted me where I want to start getting closer to God once again and see how to rectify my life, which is great. Rudy, before, you know, we end this podcast, is there anything that's in your heart as far as right now? Let me rephrase that question. Before we end the podcast, what's your mission right now? What do you feel is your purpose right now in life?
You know, my mission in life has always been, and since I can remember, is help people fulfill the call and the life that they have been called to live and lead by God. And I think that that's a mouthful, but it what it really means is that we all have a purpose, and sometimes we don't have healthy models, and sometimes we don't even know where to start. And I think that's where I come in. And, you know, you mentioned my four kids and two grandkids. Two of those kids are my stepkids. Oldest one went to business school. The second one went to nursing school. The third one, which is Tanya and mine, he's applying and accepted to pre-med schools right now. We're looking to what school he's going to go to. And the fourth one is a missionary. And it starts at home. And my mission of really allowing others to find their calling and their purpose has started at home with my four kids, where I've been a facilitator, someone that has been in a humility posture because of being a stepdad, always being in the shadow. And then the third one is that unconditional love. And I think that no matter who I meet or who has ever met me or journey with me, they're going to hear those three things. They're going to say, man, unconditional love from Rudy, no matter where I'm at, no matter where, I've always unconditional love, always facilitate their dreams. I always there to help them, empower them to do what God is calling them. And then always being humble in a posture of humility that it's not about me, man. It takes a community, and I'm just happy to be a part of it.
That's awesome. I like that. I like the fact that you said, correct me if I'm wrong. That's just how I took it. It's almost you discovered your purpose when you started serving or doing your work at home.
Bro, that's it right there.
And I think that's amazing because that's how it's developing for me as well. I was so frustrated with life as far as, you know, how do I find my purpose? How do I figure out what I'm supposed to do? And when I started believing in my kids' dreams, facilitating the stuff that they want to do, and not saying, like, before I used to be the type of person to be like, why are you even dreaming that? Like, that's dumb. Like, dream something else that's going to make you more money. Now God has really taught me, like, what they feel in their heart is what is in their heart. They're an individual person. They're not you.
That's right.
So, and I've learned this through you and through Tanya, where now I'm helping them out, helping Jackie out, and it's crazy. Now it's helping me out, and look at where we are.
You know, Mike, I you know, there's all these people that want to be coaches and want to be leaders and want to do all this stuff, but when you look at their home, there really hasn't been any structure that has been there. And I think for me, that's where I've always wanted to start. Was that I wanted not only to start within myself, but also become this developer of people and their dreams. And you know, I've just been, by God's grace and Tanya's love and support, that, you know, I've been known as Tanya's husband the last 3 years, because when she got her doctorate degree, you know, it was and Breath of Life took off. And I'm okay with that because I'm a facilitator, unconditional love, and being humble in that. And that's my identity now. I lead and live out of those three things.
Yeah.
And so it's I'm okay being Tanya's husband.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm okay being in the shadows, per se, because it's not about me. I look at her and I celebrate her. I look at my kids, I celebrate them, and I'm just happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, and if one day God decides to celebrate you and put you out there as well, then glory to God. And it's funny that you say that, and to kind of finish it up, I remember I asked you that one time, because the same way you can say, you know, I'm known as Tanya's husband, well, I'm known as Jackie Rivera's husband. And it's very difficult because as a man, you're like, I want people to know my name. Like, I'm not known by someone else. But through learning your identity, it doesn't offend you. But I remember I asked you one time, I said, you know, what do you do? How do you feel? Like, you know, and your answer to me, I don't know if you remember, we were actually downstairs celebrating Breath of Life. I think it was a 1 year, or it was an anniversary. And you said to me, I will put up my first ministry up against anyone's. Mm. And when you told me that, it hit me like a ton of bricks, dude. Mm. I almost want to cry. Mm. Because your first ministry is your house.
That's right.
And I know families where the wife is just so suppressed. And when you said that, it just hit me like it really changed my life to look things differently. So now when I do hear the comments, I'm like, it's okay, dude. I would like to ask, you know, I don't, that's kind of pity. So I don't, but my mind does go there. Like, I would like to ask, you know, your wife, how she's feeling. Mm. How are the kids feeling? Mm. But that really hit me, man.
That's so good.
So that's what we do here, guys. We cry, we discover, right. we learn, we develop, and we grow.
Thank you for letting me share my story, bro. Yeah. I don't think many people always know the function, right? I always say the function of what we do, but not many know Rudy.
Yeah.
And thank you for letting me share that, bro. Thank you for letting me in. And now you know why I do what I do, because I was messed up once.
Same. Hey, guys, thank you guys again. Rudy, before we leave, how can people find you?
Yeah, Rev Rudy 1 at Instagram, Facebook, Rudy Paniagua, Paniagua, and then Breath of Life Foundation.
Yeah, guys, in the Breath of Life, I'll add the website right there so you guys can check it out. So many good resources. They even have an area where they recommend books. They have the LEAD program that I mentioned earlier, which I already discussed it with my wife, and I said, hey, we got to figure this out because I'm going to have to be a part of this pretty soon. So we're growing, we're learning. Rudy, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it. Guys, see you guys next episode. I appreciate it.
We'll Mac
Effect, out. Peace.